stay inspired.
Look for a program. Look for a life experience. That is not about memorization. It is about setting out to solve problems. If you can solve problems, then that's how you're going to be successful.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Welcome back to Inspired Leadership. My name is Tyler Bailey. I'm here with Susan Power. And if you haven't been to this podcast before, this is where we deconstruct the idea of inspired leadership, of what it means to be an inspired leader, what it takes, what people have seen in their own experiences, who has inspired them to take them more from just getting from point A to point B. And today we have an excellent guest for you. Today we have Kim Watson. She's the president and managing director for WePro Canada. In her role, Kim focuses on WePro's vision for business growth, localization, brand building, and transformation engagements with clients in key sectors within Canada. She is a veteran in the information and communication technology field with over 30 years of experience in various leadership roles, including development, sales, engineering, delivery, software. She's done all outsourcing, she's done it all. With 2 decades of experience working in IBM Global Services, such as IBM Software Division, she worked as Vice President for Client Advocacy in the Office of Global President and CEO at IBM. Additionally, Kim also worked for Bell Canada for 5 years as Vice President of Engineering and Program Delivery. Just the kind of person we want to learn about and help us develop this definition of inspired leadership. Let's get into the interview.
On today's episode of the Inspired Leadership Podcast, we have Kim Watson. Welcome, Kim.
Oh, thank you. And thanks very much for the invitation. So glad to have the opportunity to chat with you today.
Yeah, real pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, maybe to start, Kim, tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, about your story. Who is Kim Watson and what's the why behind what you do each day?
Sure. Great question. So who I am. So I came from very humble beginnings, raised in a small town called Campbellford, Ontario. And one of the things that really made me who I am was my parents' work ethic. So coming from that humble beginnings, I think I had my first job when I was about 9 years of age. And one of the funny things that my father likes to tell often is when I was 12, I went to a corner store and I asked for a job, and my parents didn't know about it. My father was a local, he ran the OPP station, the Ontario Provincial Police Station, and he found out when he stopped by that convenience store that I had went and I'd asked for a job. And part of the reason I asked for the job was I was tired of looking after my brother, my parents, and doing all the cooking and house chores. So I decided that from an early age, I wanted to get out there and earn my own living. So I think, you know, the other thing that I would say, it's I'm very much fueled by curiosity and, you know, looking at solving problems. That has been my entire background. The ambition that I've had was always learning about the world and trying different things, but it all came from a strong work ethic that I received from home. I also have to say that I had a lot of great opportunities with people who took a chance on me and gave me opportunities to move forward.
Did you get the job?
I did get the job.
Oh, man. So I learned that you went to criminology at first for school, and you were inspired by this computer program by SPSS. Do you remember the moment that you had that you were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing with statistics? Do you remember that moment, the one case that you were doing that I can't believe we can get this information or we can learn this? Do you remember what it was?
I absolutely do. And so I first started my university in a business course, and then I took an add-on, the criminology course. Probably fueled by my father being in the police field. And the moment when I took that SPSS course was the amount of data. And so back then it was card punching, right? It was mid-80s. And so it was all the data about why do voters vote the way that they do. And I was just amazed at, you know, how a large amount of data could come out with a statistical analysis so that you could predict how people would act. And that just hit me home from a problem-solving perspective about how incredible the ability to do that.
as you know, the theme of this cast is to try and define what inspired leadership is. What does inspired leadership mean to Kim Watson?
So to me, as a leader, it's important for me to get the best out of every individual. And I think that I'm my own case study, that people took chances with me that I want to make sure that I do with others as well. We all have unique talents. And I think that really does speak to the diversity and inclusion that we need to have today. But really about how do you get the best out of everybody and building that diverse team. I would also say that leveraging my network. And so I think that some of the mentors that I've had and sponsors, the best thing that they did for me and what I try to do every single day is to share my network, especially with women, so that they can have opportunities that may not be afforded to them otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I like that you leverage your network. And I think a lot of people forget that. We kind of get stuck in our job or our way of, and we surround ourselves. We have our people that we work with, but we maybe just get in that routine. But leveraging your network, that's one that hasn't come up.
I wonder, Kim, too, like if anyone came to you and asked, how do I become a more inspired leader? I don't even know where to start. I'm new to people management. What advice might you offer them?
The advice that I would give, it's vulnerability. Mm-hmm. The first step of really growing is, you know, on that constant learning path is being vulnerable and asking for support, going and having those conversations. Men, and I will put the gender difference here, men are much better at being with other men, whether it's social, whether it's golf, spending 8 hours on a golf course, learning about each other in a non-business setting. Women really need to work at that. And so that vulnerability about going and asking other people about, you know, how can they grow? Give them a problem to solve. Be curious about how they can help you. That is, to me, the most important thing, is that vulnerability to go and have that conversation and put that step forward. If you don't do it, people are not going to come to you to ask you. You need to take that first step yourself.
You're reminding me of a conversation I had with a female leader this morning who wanted a mentor, but she didn't know what she wanted mentorship on. And to me, that kind of feels like, well, if you're going to look for that, don't push it on someone else to figure that out. Get really clear on how they can help you. Are they even the right person to help you, you know, based on what you're looking for?
That's exactly it. You know, and it's about that self-motivation, that self-curiosity, that we need to go and push what we need. But you have to know, what is it that you're looking for? For me, I have lots of different mentors that I go to speak about different things. And as the president of Wipro, this was a new role for me, growing Wipro in Canada, which is not as well known. It's a bit of a lonely position. And so I've gone out to many CEOs that I have known over the years and asked them for advice and guidance. And what that gives me is they're very much willing then to support me and help me, because I've been vulnerable with them about what I'm trying to do here. And it's amazing. People really do want to collaborate. People really do want to help, but they only know that if you put that in front of them.
Can you tell us a little bit about your role at Wipro and what your current priorities are?
Absolutely. So my role is to grow Wipro Canada. While Wipro is known very well around the global company, we're a $12 billion company, 260,000 employees. In Canada, we're not as well known. And so my entire role and why I was recruited here is to grow Wipro Canada. And so my priorities are very simple. In fact, before I joined, I already had my 90-day plan built. And my priorities are the following. Improve employee engagement. Engaged employees will drive client experience. That's number two. Client experience will, all the clients, when they really become and have that great experience with us, that'll drive the growth. So three things that motivate me every single day is employee engagement, client experience, and growth. That is my goal. And to put Wipro on the map as a tier one trusted enterprise provider. What we do at Wipro, we have many big names that we support in Canada and globally.
but we're not as well known as the others. And so my job here is to make sure that we are known and to continue that growth by providing really great business outcomes.
One of the many jobs and things that I do, I'm a GM at a golf course, and we're always looking to measure customer experience. We're always trying to measure that for different jobs, especially for, let's say, a job like this. How would Wipro help, let's say, the golf course in measuring customer experience here?
So it's a great question. So typically the answer would be we use Net Promoter Score like most firms do to understand how our customers doing. So you have a quantitative view of exactly how you're doing. But if you take it to a golf course, I'm going to put the same analogy from a technology IT perspective.
Sure.
To me, you can have any rating in the world. So NPS, that's one rating. But to me, it's about how does the client feel when they come to your golf course? Do they feel that they're getting a customized experience? Do they feel that they're known at your golf course? And that feeling drives loyalty. That feeling drives bringing your peer group to go to that golf course. So to me, it's not only about the measurement of the score, it's about the feeling. And that is a little bit harder to capture. The score does some of it, but I think you would know. And it's about your staff. And that's why employee engagement is my number one priority every single day, because people like to buy from people. And so every single employee, they're the ones that drive the relationship to that client experience.
Yeah, I like that. Focus on your employees. Employees number one. I like that. And yeah, it goes along the same lines that people really won't remember what you say, but they'll remember how they made you feel. I kind of, yeah, love it. Oh, love it. Okay. Question for you. What advice do you have for business leaders and how they can learn more about AI applications and blend the automation into their current work process?
That's a great question. And it's very topical. So everybody's talking about all the buzzwords in the industry right now. Generative AI, ChatGPT, machine learning, blockchain, virtual reality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. To me, so we're always going to have those buzzwords in the industry. And I believe that the success around that is really simplifying it, and that you'll hear that from me all the time. And it's one of the things that I like to pride myself on, is simplifying complex technical challenges into easy sound bites. So to me, going back to that simplification, it's all about business outcomes. So if you're talking about technology, then you've probably missed the mark. It's about how do you use technology to impact positive change. And so right now, probably the thing that's on most people's minds, and you know, Ginni Rometty, who I worked for, retired president, CEO, and chairman of IBM, I worked for her for a year, and she's come out with a new book called Good Power. It's about how the key word to me is that positive change. So, and positive change, what does that mean? It means doing good. So, you know, what does doing good mean? So it's, you know, during COVID, so enabling medical care via virtual. So that is an example of AI. Bad tech, so technologies excluding accessibility. So for example, I've got 80-year-old parents. So it's great that we've got all this technology, but if we're not inclusive about that technology, so when you show up at the airport and the only avenue you have with technology is your smartphone kiosks, then that excludes a part of our population, which to me is bad AI.
I see. So it's almost embrace the change and try to use AI and figure out how AI can make positive change instead of
exactly
and open up to be more accessible for more clients.
I got to ask you, Kim, what was the leadership style of previous CEO at IBM? Curious what she was like to work with.
So her leadership style was all about client experience. So my job actually when I worked for her was to prepare her for every single client meeting, and she spent countless hours making sure that she was ready for those client meetings. Mm-hmm. So when she went to those meetings, it wasn't about selling technology, it was talking about the business outcomes that client was looking for. Her style was very much to be in front of the client, and I emulate that every day. She would be one of the people that I would say that I learned the most from about being in front of the client and focusing not on technology, but what is it that the business is trying to do?
Amazing. I'm a huge fan from at least the interviews I've seen of her. She seems amazing. In terms of World Economic Forum, you may have seen they had a survey that they published April 30th, 2023, and there's been a lot of fear and excitement about AI. And their prediction is that 14 million jobs will be lost globally over the next 5 years, while also creating 69 million jobs. So 2% of total employment in terms of lost jobs. And they're also predicting a lot of job change that employees will need to make based on everything evolving with AI. And I know even IBM had an announcement about a hiring freeze for some of its back office jobs. So curious what type of trends you're seeing that might help both employers and employees prepare to automate certain jobs and adapt for new jobs created.
So Susan, I think that there's a lot of noise in some respects about AI and the loss of jobs. I think that the difference will be is that new jobs will arise that we don't even know sitting here today what those jobs will be. I believe that every employee, doesn't matter the field that they're in, if they do not continue to upskill themselves, they will be left behind. Technology is moving at a very fast pace. And so the upskill and taking the ownership of your career is most important. But, you know, if we think about when COVID hit, for example, how the transformation helped support all of us. Again, going back to that, being able to have a virtual medical appointment. I would say also things like we didn't know, if you think back, and, you know, like I said, I graduated university in the 80s. If I look back into the 80s, did I think that there would be companies out there with zero assets? So I'm thinking about Airbnb. I'm thinking about Uber, about how those companies came to be. We wouldn't have imagined that. I believe that we're in the same place today, is that employees' roles will change. New jobs will come based on this. I do believe that some of the back office things that are being eliminated by technology are fantastic. Some of the things that are the grind jobs, you know, having a chatbot, most of us would prefer to have a chatbot now, or to be able to do some of those simple things without sitting on hold to talk to a human being. And so those things like the chatbots are really making a difference in a lot of people's life, so you can multitask. I also think of the new generation behind us. I have a 27-year-old. He does everything through his smartphone. And so that technology is helping him do things the way that he wants to do it. But then again, I go back to, you know, good technology, bad technology. We always need to keep in mind that we need to cater to all and be inclusive to all people. So elderly people, people with disabilities, that the technology also needs to support them equally as well as the new generations coming behind us.
What advice would you have for a young person entering university? Say this person is very enthusiastic, they're smart, good head on their shoulders. They can do pretty much whatever they want. And they really want to know what should I take? I have this new TV show, looks great. Should I do that? What should I do? So when selecting a career to make their move, what advice would you give to them right now?
So Tyler, that's a great question. And a lot of our young people are struggling, those that have gone through university and do have their university degree. And so, you know, that age 20 to 30 is a big challenge for us in Canada, and I think around the world. So my advice would be this, first of all, and this is my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think that universities and colleges need to reimagine the education institution. Degrees aren't always necessary. I think that life experience and learning through experience could be more important. And so I think about the money that I spent on university for myself and even for my son. Could have that money been spent more wisely traveling around the world, learning about different cultures, understanding how to solve problems on the fly versus memorization, which is a lot of what happens in the university program. Mm-hmm. I believe my advice would be look for a program, look for a life experience. that it's not about memorization. It is about setting out to solve problems. If you can solve problems, then that's how you're going to be successful.
Hey, I'm even just life experience myself after university, I got into insurance for a couple of years and it was great. But then I felt the need to go be a teacher. I wanted to go across overseas and teach and learn, and just meeting the people overseas in a brand new language and trying to work myself through that was its own education in the first 6 months. I felt like you just get so much out of it. And I really do believe that for what you pay for the university degree, I think they should put in, hey, you have to do this over a period of, let's say 4 or 5, you have to do it over 6 years, but you have to take a break and you have to do something outside to actually get that degree. I think reimagining it is, I think you're right on with that.
I have been very blessed that through my work, I've been able to travel around the world supporting clients in many, many countries. Every country and where you come from sets a different viewpoint of how you look at the world. The more experiences that you have in different countries, different cultures, it allows you to do things differently. It allows you to imagine what you could do. And so that is the one thing that I would say that our current university programs, we don't do enough about. And so those life experiences, getting them early on, does make a difference in how you approach the rest of your career.
I know I didn't travel as much as I would have liked to as a middle-class kid that grew up in New Brunswick, but this summer we're bringing our two kids. I have a 10 and 13-year-old son, and we're bringing them to Japan for 2 weeks. And I've never been to Asia. This will be the first time I've ever gone there, you know, as a middle-aged person, but I am so excited to see what type of connections they make and what I hope insights they have from experiencing a new culture. So
Well, you're going to love it. Japan is one of my most favorite places to go. And I've had the opportunity to go many times. And to your point, I was raised again in Campbellford, Ontario. Like, our population was 3,500 people, and that was counting all the outskirts of all the country kids that got bused in. And so I didn't have that luxury to travel either until, you know, well into my 20s when I was working. And it has made a huge difference. And even how I look at running Wipro Canada, Canada is a melting pot of different cultures, and that experience that I've had around the world really is important.
What would you see as the most important factors, Kim, for attracting more women to enter the technology sector?
So I believe, well, it's always been male dominated. So the technology has been extremely male dominated because we doubled down on computer science and mathematics. And I think the challenge there is most women, we didn't have the same opportunity. And I think social played a lot into it about being challenged about those math and computer science courses. It just, we weren't encouraged to go into them, at least in my generation. But when I look at the new generation, they're also not going into those classes. I think it's not about the math and it's not about the computer science. Again, it goes back to solving problems. And women, quite honestly, are exceptional problem solvers. If you go back in history, women have always been the ones that have been solving a lot of problems, even though the male was always, you know, put in the forefront. I think Warren Buffett has an article out just recently saying about who you marry makes a big difference in your career success. Well, and that was from a male statement about having the woman making all the, you know, making all the decisions at home really helped the male succeed. I think in this case, how we need to bring more women into technology is through good coaching, good mentors, good internships. Let women see that there is more to technology just than mathematics and computer science. It's about solving those business outcomes. I also believe, and I finish every town hall that I do, especially when I go to India, because I do spend a lot of time in India, it's making sure that women are invited. They're invited to answer, to be part of the table. And so I finish every town hall with the same thing. Out of every time you go into a meeting, there's 10 men and only one woman. Is the man asking the question, you know, Susan, what do you have to add?
One last question for you. What projects do you have on the go, not just in projects that you're focused on in your career, but maybe a personal project that you have going on as well?
Sure. Thanks, Tyler, for the question. So
From a work perspective, I remain with the same strategy. It's all about improving the employee engagement, the client experience, and growth of Wipro Canada being a tier one enterprise provider, trusted enterprise provider. Personally, my goal now, and it's interesting, a lot of my girlfriends, we talk about this all the time. You think that by the time you get to your mid to late 50s, you've got everything figured out. I think that as things change in your life, that you have to, and I, back to lifelong learning, you also need to figure out different techniques, tools to take you through the next step. So my next project really, from a personal perspective, is that, and I hate saying work-life balance because it's such a cliche, but it's really about wellness. Getting, making sure that you're prepared for the next chapter. I asked my 80-year-old father what guidance would he give me now that he's, you know, going into his 80s, if you will, or in 90s. And the one thing that he said to me is, if I would have known I would live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. And I believe that is something that all of us that are workaholics really need to think about. That really you need to focus on wellness overall, whether it's mental, whether it's physical. That is something that we all need to focus on. So that is my project that I'm really going to be doubling down on.
Where can our listeners go, Kim, to learn more about yourself? What website would you suggest? Where can they go to learn more?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Susan. So you can always go to our corporate website, which is Wipro. Just do a Google on Wipro and you'll find us, or my LinkedIn profile, Kim Watson. And that's a great place to find out what we're doing with Wipro Canada. I post quite regularly, and that's a great place to reach out to me directly if there's any questions.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Kim. That's inspired me. Woo!
Thanks for having me.
And that concludes our podcast for today with Kim Watson. You know, having an amazing work ethic, something that people can take a chance on. But not only that, getting outside of your own town and your own group of friends, getting outside of your country even, and experiencing what other cultures are like, and getting a grasp on what their perspective is in life, so you can bring that into your own life, into your own experience, into your own business even. We hope each cast helps you define your definition of inspired leadership a little better. And with that,